Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Welcome, everybody, and I hope that you're having an amazing, amazing morning. This is Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx speaker, business positioning strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 70 countries, such as the United States, Canada, UK, all across Africa and Europe, and all the way to New Zealand, Malaysia, and Australia. So I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that changed our lives and how we use this to then transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us right here on Blog Talk Radio Network Tuesday through Friday. I ask that you join our Facebook community and you can interact with all of the guests that I bring on the show. You can join us at Life Transformation Radio Community. If you like what you hear today, you can subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, the Google Play Music app, Himalaya app, wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts. I ask that you please subscribe to the show. And then if you like it, please leave a rating, a review, so that we know how we're doing. On the show, I bring on entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, podcasters, authors, amazing people who are impacting the world around them. My guest today does exactly that. If you have any questions for any of the guests that I bring on the show, you can call us up at 657-383-1109. Again, the number, 657-383-1109. And with that, please help me welcome to the show my friend, Sean Romero. Hey, buddy. Welcome to Life Transformation Radio.
Hey, what's going on, brother? I appreciate you having me, man.
Absolutely, man. This is going to be an amazing conversation. We already connected, you know, a while back, and we're going to get into some stuff, man, and I am freaking pumped to be doing the show with you today.
I'm too. Yeah, dude. No, I appreciate it, man. I'm pretty pumped, too, man. It's kind of like, you know, when we connected, we're like, you know, ready to do karate in the garage here, man, you know, so because of our backgrounds here. So,
all right.
So I'm ready to rock out, man.
Awesome. Awesome. So the title of the episode is Faithfully Led with Sean Romero. Sean Romero is a 17-year U.S. Air Force veteran, John Maxwell certified coach, speaker, and mentor, host of the Faithfully Led podcast, and co-host of the High Impact Leadership podcast, a single father of four, who is on a mission to create a faithfully led tribe. He believes strongly in paying blessings forward and helping people live exceptional lives. He plans to create great leaders one awesome person at a time. Learn more about Sean Romero and his faithfully led mission by going to Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and inside of the show notes is the 5 steps to help navigate yourself after divorce. There's the link right there. Also, if you want to connect with Sean for 1 hour, he's offering free coaching calls for one or connection calls or whatever, discovery calls, 1 hour, faithfully led right there, Calendly link, connect with him, and I'm telling you, he'll change your life. So with that said, my man, what is your why, man? What, like, how did you get into this? Like, tell me your deep, deep why for what you do.
Well, you know, after joining the service, and I'm originally from New York City, so you know, a lot of that kind of tied from, you know, and not to be kind of corny or whatever, but it did tie like around 9/11. You know, I had literally enlisted 364 days, September 12, 2000. I enlisted, and you know, after that day, and pretty much after that, you know, for everyone in the military and everyone around the world, pretty much, or even the United States, you know, our lives were completely changed. And to be able to see that happen, you know, especially be there after a few days after everything happened, it really did impact me in a different way, because I joined the military pretty much for kind of, I'll be honest with you, like for selfish reasons. You know, I'm a private pilot. You know, I want to fly for the Air Force. You know, I want to have a cool life, you know, to be able to fly, you know, the airlines and then part-time with the Air Force, you know, flying fighter jets, things that. But after that, that all changed for me. It completely changed. And once I joined the military and understood that it was for a greater cause, not just for myself, but for a greater cause, then it really impacted me deeply. And I wanted to be a leader. I enjoyed being able to be that leader, to be able to lead other people and change other people's lives, impact them directly in that way. And so when I got back home after tech school, you know, my instructor, he was, you know, he's my mentor. He's one of my best friends. And he really led me on a path of, you know, a faith. And I thought I was already a faithful person. You know, I would go to church, things like that, but I really didn't understand that relationship with God and how I wanted to be more of a servant rather than just, you know, be that guy who's, hey, I'm always there. You know, I'm the one that you can rely on, but I'm not really truly serving people. And so after a while, you know, after some tribulations in my life, you know, losing my mom, a lot of other family strifes, a lot of other family struggles, and seeing different things in my career, I finally, you know, gave in to, you know, really being that person, to being that servant. And when I got married, you know, we had kids together. She had kids previously, and I wanted to be that person. I wanted to be that father, be that husband, to lead them to a better life. And unfortunately, things that, you know, my marriage was not, and just like any other marriage, you know, nothing's ever perfect, but it just didn't work because, you know, we didn't communicate. You know, there was a lot of infidelity, and so it was just very frustrating. So, you know, we ended up getting divorced, but that was like literally 5 days after I had to resign from the Air Force and when I got out of the Air Force. And that was just happened last year. So my whole life just completely just fell apart. You know, I thought I was this failure. I thought that, you know, after 17 years of being a crew chief and being a flight engineer and leading all these men and women, you know, and teaching them and training them, I didn't have a purpose anymore. You know, even though I, you know, had my kids, you know, had them, and they were, you know, my lifeblood, but, you know, they were my why, but it wasn't the why for me. It wasn't that why that was just going to drive me, because, you know, eventually my kids are going to get older. They're going to leave.
Right.
They're going to have their own lives. They're going to have their own family, but I'm still with me. I'm still me. I still have to have my purpose, and my purpose was constantly evolving over the years. So once everything fell apart, you know, I immediately turned to God, and I did, you know, what I've wanted to do for a long time. You know, I got baptized in my church, and it led me on that faith-based path and to really learn how to be a servant, but not only just servant to my children, but to families in general, and especially to men, and especially because when you look around, all you hear is toxic masculinity, and you hear the nonsense about how men have to be this way, how this way, and then all of a sudden everything gets turned on their head, and everyone has an excuse to blame someone else, but no one's ever sitting there trying to pick up these pieces and go out and rebuild lives and rebuild communities.
Right.
So I felt that it was in my, you know, this was in my heart, that God placed in my heart to go ahead and do that. And the best way to do that is to really start rebuilding men. Because if you look at, you know, all the statistics, most of the time the kids that grew up in broken homes, especially young males, end up either in jail or worse.
Yep.
So I want to stem that tide. You know, I want to stem that tide. And if I don't do something about it, then who is? You know, I'm not going to say that I'm going to come and save everyone. But if I can save one life, then that one life can save two lives, and that life can save four lives, and I could start that process. So this is what was God put in my heart. That way I can do it. And this is why that's why I created Faith for the Life.
I love it, man. You covered quite a bit. And, you know, we talk about military life, and, you know, it's just one of those byproducts. You know, I know a lot of people who got divorced. I know a lot of people who, you know, infidelity. I know a lot of people, I mean, it's just, it's a hard life, man. So give us a transformational moment or two transformational moments. You know, the theme of the show is life transformation. We were one way, we went through some stuff, and now we're this way. So give us a transformational moment or two or wherever you want to go with it that happened in your life, which then put you on the path to what you're doing today.
Well, the biggest transformation in my life was when back in 2013, I was still married, and my ex and I, we went through almost a year long separation, and again due to infidelity and stuff like that. And so I was doing a lot of reflection because I thought it was my fault. I thought it was something I was doing, and you know, of course, there's problems on both ends, and then there's blame to go around everywhere. And I'm not trying to place everything on her, but you know, it caused me to look into my life and to really reflect on what I was doing with my career and how I wanted to change, you know, just my life in general. And my career at the time, being a crew chief, I was a crew chief on the 16th, and I was the lead trainer. So I was training all the new airmen that were coming in, and my unit was going through this huge transition where a lot of the old guys were leaving, you know, and so I was one of kind of like the middle of the road old guys, if you will. So I had like a lot of the older experience, but I was transitioning to the newer guys, you know, trying to transfer that knowledge onto them and really keep that knowledge base, you know, and experience base to continue to create. And so, you know, I relished in that when I was able to impact them in that life. So in 2013, when all that stuff happened and everything just started kind of falling apart in the marriage there, I really saw it changed me in a way to where I became more of a servant. And I say that a lot because you have to be a servant. When you're in the military, you hear the term you're serving. You're serving. Yes, you are serving. You are not only serving the government, you're serving the people of the United States. You're not only serving the branch of the military that you're in, but you're serving for your bro. You're serving for your sister. You're serving for whoever you're on that line with. You know, whether you're kicking in doors, you're serving on ships, or you're servicing jets on an airbase, doesn't matter. You're serving. And to me, at that point, I didn't feel like I was at a point where I was truly serving. And so when I took over the training program, that's when I really truly felt that I was truly serving them. And I turned it around with the help of another good friend of mine, that we completely turned the program around, and we were truly now serving these airmen to really get them to their purpose. Because it wasn't just them that we were worried about. It wasn't just the mission that we were worried about. We were worried about the legacy that we were going to be leaving behind. But we were building legacies as we were helping building these young airmen. And that's what it came down to. And I really took a lot of big disintrospect in my life to what kind of legacy I want to leave. Am I just going to leave that legacy for my kids that, oh, hey, dad served in the military for 20 or 30 years, and that was it. I was the airplane guy. I was the crew chief. I was the F-16 guy. You know what I mean? But
the F-16.
After that, you know. I mean, you're an F-15 guy, but you understand.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, but it's still, you sit there and you go, man, you know, what do I do after this? When they retire the jet or they retire me, what do I do? What is my legacy going to be? You know, is my legacy just going to be that museum piece that's going to be in the Smithsonian? You know what I mean? At one point. But I didn't want that. I didn't want that anymore. I wanted my legacy to be a lasting effort. You know, because Bruce Lee, I studied martial arts when I was a kid. And Bruce Lee, one of my favorite quotes from Bruce Lee was that the key to immortality is first living a life worth remembering. Everybody wants to live forever. Everybody wants to live forever. Everybody wants that key to live forever. And especially when you're young, you think you're going to live forever. But the simple fact is that we're all not going to live forever. But what does live forever is our legacy. We're still learning about legacies from great people that happened centuries ago that we're reading about. Why? Because they created a legacy. Yep. They created a life worth remembering. And that was my key. And that was in 2013 when all that stuff was happening. That really became my mission. That became my purpose. But when everything really fell apart in 2018, then it became my mission. Then that became the start of my legacy.
Awesome. I love that, man. I love it. So how have you taken your transformational moments that have happened in your life? I'm sure there's many. And taking the why that you use to fuel you every day, how have you taken that and elevate the world around you?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question, dude. Because, you know, because of everything that I went through, and not only that, prior to the military, and one of the things that I've been trying to really break into was because, you know, we hear the number 22, and especially now May is a, you know,
yep,
mental health awareness month and stuff. You know, we hear, especially in the military, the number 22 vets take their lives every single day. And so
yep,
on average, so, you know, I've had good friends that have taken their lives because of that, mm-hmm, and they become statistics. You know, I myself have gotten to such a deep depression where I could have become a statistic, you know, and we both have spoken about this. And so it became something that is, it's part of my legacy that I want to leave behind, that I want to show people that you don't have to become that statistic, especially in the military. But I had to look deep down inside myself to see where a lot of this stuff was stemming. And I did a lot of research, and a lot of stuff was stemming, not even so much as, you know, the military, what they're doing in combat zones, because a lot of it isn't even stemming from combat zones. It's prior to them
right,
even coming into the service. And so,
100%.
You know, when I look at that, and when I look at that, it's like, it's crazy, you know, how, you know, when people don't realize what they happened during their previous years and their formative years, how it carries over. And then when they don't feel like they have anything anymore, then they go into that despair. So what I try to do is I try to find deep down inside where that stuff went wrong. I mean, because, you know, as a crew chief, what do? You troubleshoot. When there's a problem, you troubleshoot. But you look back and you look into the forms and you say, okay, all right, this happened on this day, and it continues to happen, and how do we do this? So you look into the schematics, you get deep into it, you break everything down to find that chain of events. And so what I do is the way I help people is I help them look into that chain of events and break into that chain of events so that way they can help them grow. Because there was another great statistic, I just read this, is that 30% of the Vietnam veterans that came after Vietnam, they had severe PTSD and there was a like high suicide rate. But out of the POWs that were locked up like 6 or 7 years that went through hell, only 4% suffered the same thing. Now you look at that and you say, wow, how do these guys who got beat and just broken down and were just starved, how do they grow after having such a traumatic event? You know? And it's because when they looked at everything and they broke everything down, they looked into the abyss, they looked down into what happened, and they accepted it. They embraced it. They embraced that uncertainty. They embraced that, you know, that aftermath. And they said, I'm not going to let this define me, and understood that this was going to be part of their legacy. They were going to understand that not only this is going to have this bad happen to me, but there's going to be other things that are going to be bad happen to me, and I'm going to embrace that too. Because guess what? Murphy's Law, Murphy's going to come knocking on the door, and he's going to come asking for his pay. And that's going to happen. That's a mathematical certainty. And whether it's,
yep,
you know, you're stuck in traffic, whether it's, you know, you didn't have your coffee that day, or you spilled the coffee on you, or, you know, you go to McDonald's and then it's 1 degree too hot, and you know what I mean? Whatever. But it's going to happen. And if you don't learn how to embrace that, and if you don't learn how to embrace that and learn how to change your future, what happens is you get stuck in depression, you get stuck in anxiety, you get stuck in, you know, this constant cycle, and you close yourself, you shut your heart out, you shut everything down, and then you no longer can move forward. And then you feel like you're wasting time, you feel like you're not achieving anything, you don't feel like you're part of society, like if you're giving back or you're fulfilling or you're viable or you're just valuable. So what I do is I help people find their value and understand that value isn't based on society's values. Values is already innate. Your value is innate. Your value is already given to you by God. God has already given you everything you need to succeed, but you just have to see it in yourself to get out there and change that about your life. And whatever it is that you want to do, whether you want to be the best mailman you want to be, whether you want to be the best fighter pilot, whether you want to be the best podcaster, whether you want to be the best business person, whatever it is, you already have those talents in you. But
Yep.
If you don't understand how to look into that abyss, if you don't know how to understand to look into that and start changing that stuff and accepting that uncertainty and accepting that, hey, guess what? You're going to fall flat on your face. You're going to have QA come over and ream you a couple of times. You're going to have – you get yelled at a few times. You're going to have bad days. If you don't learn how to embrace that, you're never going to want to venture out and face that unknown and deal with that. And that's what happens to a majority of people. Majority of people, they have these great ideas. They want to be business people. They want – they but, you know – it never comes to fruition. You know, Les Brown, what did he say? He said that the rich, and this is where I heard from Les Brown, said the richest place in the world is a cemetery. Why? Because people yep. sit there and they die with their dreams. They die with unwritten books. They die with unwritten movies. They die with unwritten businesses. They die with unwritten ideas. All that is unachieved. Why? Because they're fearful. And they become fearful because they're fearful of the unknown. And what I do is I teach people how to embrace that unknown and how to embrace that uncertainty and to go out there and achieve their dreams.
Perfect. All right, we can all go home now. Nailed it. I love it, man. I love the passion, love the energy. I love what you're doing. And, man, you're so right. Oh, man, it's like – so many people that I talk to on a daily basis, you know, they have a story. They have things that they could be doing, things that they could leverage, but they either don't know how, they're unsure of themselves, they don't believe in themselves, or they sometimes sit there and live in the space that people have created for them. Like they live in the reality of what other people think about them instead of living in their reality and living their truth and believing in themselves. They believe what other people believe about them. I'm not good enough. Why? Right. Because I was told my whole life I wasn't good enough. Why do you do that?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like there's so right. much of this happening right now. And even like in the military, you know, when you get in the military, you know, we pump you up like, dude, we're badasses. We're in the military. We're the top 1%. Like all you hear about in their whole military career, you're the top 1% of the United States population that ever puts on a uniform. You're the top 1%, you know, and they pump you up and pump you up and pump you up. But yet we have these self-defeating behaviors where veterans are killing themselves and active duty members are killing themselves and Guard and Reserve are killing themselves and they're getting divorces and they're on drugs and they're, you know, consuming so much alcohol that they're getting their stomach pumped at 3 a.m., you know, and the DUI right. and suicide rates are so astronomically out of control in the military, but yet we're supposed to be the badasses in the top 1%. What they fail to realize right. is that everybody is meant to be the top 1%. Some people join mm-hmm. the military because they have no place to go. When I was a drill instructor, I had a guy come into basic training with a black plastic bag. And when he left that black plastic bag behind him because he was living under an overpass. At 18, his parents kicked him out, told him to get a real job. He lived on the streets for 3 years. He was homeless, bouncing from house to house, getting different jobs, getting fired, getting hooked on drugs and, you know, whatever. Luckily, he didn't have any felonies, but they let him in. He's like, dude, I'm homeless. Like, I need to freaking do something. So at 21, he came in to the military and one of the best people I've met. You know, this was his why. He's like, dude, I cannot keep doing what I'm doing. Like, he needed to make a change. You know, then you got other guys who, you know, I had a person in basic training. I was like, this needs to be cleaned. And, you know, like the dust downs and making the beds. But our maid does all that. What? Your maid does it? Wow. Well, you joined the wrong service, my friend. You might want to go join the Peace Corps or something like that because we get down and dirty. Like, you know what I mean? And so when I hear all the complaining, I hear all this other stuff, I'm like, dude, you do know that our job is to defend freedom and kill people who try to take it away, right? Like when you literally break down the military's job, we defend freedom and kill those who try to take it away. The end.
Yep.
But they think about, oh, it's a 9-to-5 and it's just a job. Like when you embrace that lifestyle, you know, it just, oh my gosh, it takes you to a different level. And some people are just not on that level. That's what I've chalked it up to. Like some people are just not on the level. They're a 4-year and out. I just want to pay for college. Hope I don't get killed. You know, go home. Like I did my 4 years. That's it. I'm done. But for the lifers like you and I, you know, we sacrifice a lot. You know, I went through a divorce. You went through a divorce. You know, I just, there's a lot of emotional sacrifices, mental, physical. You know, there's a lot of things that you sacrifice. So what I want to talk about just for a second is how you overcame that. And now you have a resource for those that faced divorce, and you're working with a lot of people that are learning to become faithfully led. So just quickly talk about that aspect.
Yeah. So, you know, like you said, you know, we go in, and it's definitely a mental skill. It's a mental lifestyle, you know, and some people have their own. And like I said, you know, like my own story, you know, I went in there thinking that I was going to be the cool guy, you know, Tom Cruise, you know, Top Gun, you know, all this other stuff, you know, women, you know, money, whatever, fame and stuff. But then it all changed. You know what I mean? That all changed. You know, once reality hits you and you understand that, you know, being the pilot, yeah, that's cool to wear. Yeah, it's not all that it's cracked up to be. Not everybody really understands that it's really not all that it's cracked up to be. But, you know, it changed because it went from going from serving to being a servant, and there's a difference. And, you know, when I went through the divorce, you know, that really, you know, hit home for me. And so what I do is I really try to break down those roots because, you know, everyone, you know, like that person that you just, you know, you mentioned, you know, one of your trainees that, you know, he came in, he had that purpose. He had that life. He wanted to go out there and make a difference for his life. And I'm sure that right now he's making a difference in other people's lives. And, you know, and life's going to hit you. Things are going to change. Things are going to, you know, especially when divorce happens. But what happens is, you look at yourself and you have to see what it is that is your foundation. You have to look at what your core is, you know, and what your character is, no matter what, because we have our core values in the Air Force, you know, excellence before self, integrity first, you know, and you know, all that good stuff, right? You know, all of, you know, everything what we do, you know. So you go in there and they instill at you the three core values, you know, you know. Search for self, you know, excellence, all you do, and, you know, all that other stuff, you know, every stuff that comes with you, you know, they re-blue you, they get you, everything you do, you know, all the, well, what is your core value?
Yep.
What are your core values? What do you want to do? What do you as a person want to do? Of course, you need to do that for your mission, but what is it that you want? So when you go through things like a divorce, you have to have that, you know, retrospect, you know, because what happens is a lot of times I found is that you lose yourself in that marriage, you lose yourself in that relationship, you lose yourself in whatever it is, you know, you can be your career, you'll lose yourself, you lose who your identity is, you lose what, and then when that's taken away, that part of your identity is now removed, it's taken away, and now what? Now you're left with nothing, now you're left with just, what do you do now? What is it that you need to do to create that, to build that back up? So I look at several things. So number one, your foundation is your faith. And now faith, when you look at the definition of faith, the faith could be anything. Your faith can be faith in yourself. It could be faith in something else. It could be faith. You know, the traditional form of faith is, you know, religion. Now I'm not a religious person. I'm a faithful person. There's a difference. There's a huge difference.
Yep.
When you have a relationship, you know, for me, my relationship with Christ, that's different than being in a religion. I don't need to go to part of a whole church or anything, even though I am part of a church and then I serve part of my church, but I am a servant, not serving, you know what I mean? And I'm not trying to be served, you know, I'm serving, I'm that servant. And so I teach people that. So you have to have that foundation. You build that foundation of character, who you are, you know, with the whole nonsense, you know, the craziness that's going on with kids now that, you know, with they're not sure of their sexuality and there's all this, you know, you see everything is a transgender and all this other stuff and nothing against them. But the whole thing is that it comes down to is who are you? Who are you? Who are you as a person?
Yep.
It's not so much, it's not who you're sleeping with or who you identify with or identify as. It's who are you as a person. So I find that I help people creating that character, finding that foundation. You can't build a house on sand. You have to have a foundation. So you built it on that bedrock, and that bedrock is you, who you are, what your morals are, what your moral compass is, what your core values are, and you teach that. So that is like their center. That's what they build upon. And then you build upon all their other different characteristics, you know,
right.
You know, how they're financial self is, if they're in deep financial issues, you know, hey, going through a divorce, yeah, you go through a ton of financial issues. If you have kids, like myself,
oh, yeah.
I have four, yeah, you know, there's a ton of financial stuff that comes with that. You know, when you're going through transitioning careers, yep, there's tons of financial stuff with it. You know, is it in that position? But even if you're well off financially, but are you serving it well? Is it serving you, or being a good steward of your finances? Are you being a good steward of what's coming from it? You know what I mean? Are you doing what you need to do? Are you overspending? Are you, you know, over-medicating, things like that? Then your mental health awareness, you know, your mental stuff. Are you doing the stuff that you need to do? Are you reading? Are you investing in yourself? Are you trying to look out for the ways to help you? Are you surrounding yourself with the right people? Because sometimes what happens is we'll get into these situations with bad people. Why? Because these people are not here to serve us. They're just here to help us become numb. And when we can
right.
become numb, we can't move forward. And then so we're just being numb together. Why? Because we don't want to think about the bad things that just happened. We don't want to think about what just happened. We just want to forget about it. You know, and that's part of the whole embracing part, because if once you embrace it and you understand that that can be your fuel, that could be your motivation, that could be, hey, I never want to be this broke ever in my life. So I'm going to make sure that this right here, this moment never happens again. So I'm going to embrace this
yep.
and use this as my fuel. And then you got to think about your health. You know, are you eating right? Are you working out? Or, you know, even if you're not working out, are you doing something physically that's going to go out? If you're just take a walk, you know what I mean? Go out in nature. You know, I live on the Jersey Shore, man, you know, and any chance I get, I'll go out to, you know, walk on the boardwalk, dude. You know what I mean? Just to go out there
yeah.
and stuff, you know, just get the sun, get the breeze, you know, get the ocean and stuff like that, man. And that's what it's all about. You know, I walk to and from school for my kids, because it's really close,
awesome.
And then also it gets us out there, you know? But that once you get those foundations in there, that's what's key. That's what helps out. That's what really creates the person. That's what embraces you, and that moves you on and helps you grow.
Right. Nope. Nailed it. 100%, man. I truly believe that. And you hit on something key, man. It's like, who are you? You know, you briefly touched on, and I don't want, you know, people to think the wrong thing, but then we talk about the gender confusion, you know, and then we talk about people, you know, the sexuality, that's a big one, right? Confused on this, that, and the other, or they're confused on their life path, or they're confused that, like, a lot of people are confused, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I'm probably confused at least once or twice a week, like, huh, well, that post didn't get quite the engagement I thought, or... Well, that decision financially wasn't a good one. Like, what the hell happened? You know, like you're confused kind of once a week, you know, but it's always executing on your vision and being faithful. Cause I'm the same way, man. I was raised Roman Catholic. So it was like a strict, you know, you're going to go to hell if you don't go to
yeah.
confession and like all this crap, you know
yep.
what I mean? And I always found a lot of things wrong with religion in general, right? Religion in general. But I found more things wrong with the rules of the religion being the focus and not
right.
being a servant of God, or not following his laws instead of the church's laws, because sometimes they conflict, or at least I thought that they would, you know, conflict. And so, you know, when I joined the military, I was like, well, I'm not going to church. I mean, I believe, you know, but yeah, I'm just not going to go, you know. And then my life
yeah.
became crap. Right. My life became crap, and it was just like,
mm-hmm.
you know, this sucks. And I blamed God, and it was all God's fault, and he hates me, and, you know, whatever. Well, after all the bad stuff goes away and then you're in a good place, you know, I start going back to church, and, you know, I start reconverting, you know, this, that, the other, this time going to a non-denominational church. Felt amazing, but it reinforced everything I felt about religion, because they're not denominational. They're a church for believers. They're a Bible-based church, period, the end. And so,
yep.
you know, getting to know everybody there and the great church family that was there, it was amazing. But I still felt like, why do I need to go to church to cultivate a relationship with God? That was always my big thing. Like, why do I need to go to church in order to cultivate a relationship? Before, in the Catholic Church, it was do these things and say these penance and confess to, you know, the Father, whatever. I always had an issue with that because, you know, it that's not what we do. We confess to God himself. to right. whatever. Why do I need to sit into a wooden box and talk to a guy I've never met and somehow he is going to absolve me when Jesus is the one who absolves me? I don't know. I just kind of felt right. weird about that. But my wife and I, you know, we do not go to church. We're not even holiday Christians. Like, we don't go to church on Christmas. We don't go to church on Easter. Like, we'll go to, like, you know, like Christmas Eve mass or whatever. But, like, if we're not going to church, we're not going to go to church just because it's a damn holiday. You know, however,
right.
we pray before each meal. We pray as a family. You know, sometimes we'll go to like a Bible study. Like, my friends will be like, hey, come to our Bible study. Like, okay, cool. Like, we're full-fledged Christians, but we don't feel like we need to go to a church in order to express the fact that we are Christians. I've seen a lot of, I don't want to get into this huge religious talk, but there are people that I know that are holy on Sunday, and on Monday they're lie, cheat, and steal. And then on Sunday they get, you know, spiritually fed. And then Monday through Saturday they're lie, cheat, and steal. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Absolutely. I see it all the time. I see it all the time. And no one's perfect, and no one's ever going to live up to that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm just like you. 100%. I was raised Roman Catholic. You know, I was raised Roman Catholic, and I was told I had to go to this priest to be absolved and whatever. And I'm like, well, but he's just as much a sinner as I am. That's what the Bible says. You know what I mean? So what's that? You know, so when I went to the non-denominational church, you know, then I saw the difference, and it was very bright.
Yep.
And it's all Bible-based, you know, and I see the difference. And so, you know, when I go there, I'm there, you know, I take my kids there. You know, my kids love to go into church, and we discuss things, and we, you know, just like you, you know, we pray before meals, and we, you know, we pray for other people, and we discuss things. And that's the way it really has to be, because it's a relationship. It's not, you know, this isn't a corporation. It's a relationship, you know, because at the end of the day, when it's time to meet our maker, you know, it's between him and I. You know what I mean? It's not between you, me, him, and there's a group of 12 people sitting in a box saying, okay, you know, let's take this to trial. You know what I mean? See if you get into the pearly gates. No, it's between you and the Creator. That's that. You know what I mean? And what you do with them, that's on you. You know what I mean? And when you're in a church, when you're in a group, you know, that helps guide you. That helps build that spiritual foundation. You know, you don't have to be like them. You don't have to do – but it helps build that spiritual foundation. You know, like the saying is, you know, you are the average of the 3 to 5 people that you hang out with the most, you know, and if that 3 to 5 people that you're with, you know, if they're that core value, if they're helping you create bigger people, create you bigger than yourself, then you're in the right room. You know what I mean? But if you get into the room where you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. You need to find that other room
Man.
That you're not the smartest person in the room, you know, so that way you can start growing, because that's how it is. You know, because when you go to church, doesn't matter what church you go to, it doesn't matter what you do. If you are the smartest person, you're not going to grow. You're going to sit there and be like, man, I could do this. Get out of here. You know, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
What happens? You know what I mean? Either you get looked at as, you know, you're not the expert, but you're looked at as this pompous person, and no one wants to learn from you anyway. Because what does John Maxwell say? No one cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yep.
And the minute that they know they're
here,
that's when they're going to start coming to you. And then that's,
man, I'll tell you what.
And that's what you're about.
I found myself in that situation last year. You know, I was at a networking event, and there was a couple, you know, big fish is what they, the guy's a big fish, that guy, you know, whatever. Dude, by the end of the night, it was like, I know more than everybody in this freaking room. Like, this sucks. You know, like, I want to go to a place where I'm just consuming and learning, and I'm getting to know people. Like, I do not want, because I had like a pretty decent, you know, I think it was like 30 or 35 people at this network event, probably tops, like maybe 30. I had half the room sitting in front of me at like standing up at a table, and I had the room in front of me, and I was explaining to them, you know, how I create content and how to be a speaker and how to do this and what's this. And like, I was explaining things. I'm like, oh, just do it this way. And it was almost like a Gary Vee moment. You know, like, I was the guy everybody was looking to, like, he has all the answers, you know, and I hated it. I hated it.
Yeah.
I didn't, not that, maybe, I don't know, maybe it was imposter syndrome. Maybe it was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm really good at what I do, and now I got to showcase it, and almost like, oh my God, maybe I say something wrong, and then maybe I don't believe in what I'm, you know, I mean, thoughts like this go through your head, you know, but I'm just sitting there, I'm like, I don't want to be that guy. I want to share information, but I don't want to be the guy. Well, Unless I'm on stage. I mean, that's different. Because then you're just the authority. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, speaking on stage, I love it, right? But I don't want to walk into a room and everybody go, oh, my God, there he is. I'm like, shut up. Like, I don't – come on. You know, like, I don't want to be that guy. Like, you know, when Tony Robbins walks into a room, everybody's, like, falling all over him. You know what I mean? Or if it's, like, Tom Cruise or, you know, George Clooney, you know, everybody's like, oh, my God. You know, I don't care about that stuff. You know, that's not me. You know?
Yeah.
But it was like a weird feeling where it's like, I literally know more than everybody in this room. Like, this sucks. So I don't want to be like that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, you want to dig deep and see who you can learn from.
Ah.
You know? I mean, it's like you don't want to beat that, you know, but at the same time, you know, you know you're good, you know, because God has given you that authority. God has given you that dominion over things, and you have to – and you are that authority. But at the same time, you have to understand, you have to be humble enough to where you say, hey, I can learn from anyone in this room. But – if you are that leading authority, you know, you do have that, you know, you do have that responsibility to pass on your knowledge, because there's somebody in that room sitting there saying that, looking to you to do that same thing. But you also have to understand that at any given moment, that other person can surpass you, you know, and that's what you want. That's what you want to look for. You want to look for that, you know, especially when you're in a position of authority. You want to look for that person who's going to surpass you. And I mean, that's the whole purpose of when we have kids. Our whole purpose of having kids is not only just to, you know, build a family and have that, you know, have that loving roots, but you want to see your kids surpass you. You want them, you want to give them the opportunities to grow past you and to be better than you, you know, and that's what the whole, that's what it's all about. And while we're here, it's our responsibility to be able to do that. That's our responsibility to be able to go ahead and do that to other people, especially people who are suffering.
Yep.
And that's what the whole, that's what Faithful Design is all about.
100%. So let's change the talk a little bit, and then I'm gonna dive into that resource. Let's talk about how you were dealt a terrible hand and had to work those bummy F-16s. How bad did that suck?
Ah, man, working the Viper, man, that's good stuff right there, man. I love working the Viper, man. You know, it was such it's such an easy jet to work on, man. It really was, you know, except when you had to, like, the old Block 25s with the Pratt & Whitney's, man. Those are beasts, man. You know, it was like engine pull Friday. Every Friday you have to pull an engine.
Yep.
You're pulling an engine. So every Friday you're pulling another engine. Yeah.
So you're pulling that motor all the time. Yep. For those listening right now, Sean and I share a very common bond with the love-hate relationship of the aircraft and the fighter world that we work on. When you're a fighter maintainer, first of all, when you're an F-16 guy, somehow you think that you're the poop and you're the best when you're not. It's the F-15 guys like me, because they have the Thunder Chickens. We call them Thunder Chickens, and F-15 guys get all super pissed. You know, the Air Force Thunderbirds. So when you're an Air Force guy and you're a maintainer and you get higher level up, and, you know, it's cool to, like, razz on each other and be like, oh, your airplane sucks, you know, and all that. And so other people do it. Then we just got to beat them up. But it's like this I don't have really any quarrel with, like, A-10 guys. And A-10 guys really are like, nah, 15's, like, cool. Like, I like the A-10, you know, 16, cool, you know. But the 15 to 16 guys, like, your airplane sucks, though. Your airplane sucks. It's like we're bitter rivals, like siblings. It's so hilarious.
Oh,
so, yeah,
yeah,
continue talking about how bad your F-16 sucks. Yeah, continue talking about that.
No, are you kidding me, man? This is the greatest jet in the world, man. F-16s are the bomb. We can do so much with the F-16, man. And it's so much fun to fly, man. I've actually gotten a ride in a Viper, man. And it was my jet that I crewed. And
that's awesome.
That was pretty badass to be able to do that, man. And then that was pretty awesome. And you know, you look at our bigger sibling, you know, the F-15, you know, and we see, you know, what the F-16 is supposed to be, and you look over to the F-16 and you're like, oh, that's what it's really supposed to be like. Oh, okay. There you go. See, now that's a real right there, you know.
It's like a chihuahua taking off and barking, right? Like, your F-15 takes off, like a chihuahua taking off. And then when the F-15 with the double engine takes off, it's like a bulldog barking, you know? That's what I equated to.
No,
F-15's like, oh, you.
It's more like, you know, we see the bulldog F-16's taking off, and then you're sitting there and you say, oh, man, That F-15, we're just waiting for another AB blowout. Just you know, is it gonna get off the ground this time,
Stop
or is
it.
it good, that is that gonna be that overweight? Is it that overweight collie that's running around? You know, that you gotta just kind of, yeah, it's gonna, it's dude, it's been about to be put down.
This interview's over. So, AB blowout is kind of a sore subject because for some reason, the F-15, now maybe not the 229s, you know, but like the 70s and 80s version, you know, especially like the 80s, you know, 86, 87, 88, 89, you know, with the other crap motor that they still use, you know, God, man, it's like there's blowouts and stuff and some different things. But, you know, those 229s, you know, because they recycle the fuel,
Right.
you know, sometimes the fuel sits in the in the exhaust. It just sits there. And then when they start the jet and it ignites, you know, they're like, "Oh my God, there's a blowout." And then what I love to see is the little airman go and take that big Halon bottle and go and put Halon into an exhaust that's blowing into their face. And I'm like, "Really?" You know, I want to be like Yoda, be like, "Remember your training." You know, like it's supposed to be sprayed down the intake, not the exhaust. Like, and I'm always sitting there yelling at him, like, "Remember your training!" And, you know, like on dodgeball, you know, "Remember your training!" You know, it's like I see these
Yeah.
kids, you know, like the tailpipe fire, and then they grab the Halon, but I'm like, "Oh God!" And then they go to the back of the jet, you know, and they spray Halon, and it goes blows back in their face, and they're like coughing and gagging. I'm like, "Nah, that didn't work. Throw it down the intake, there, buddy." So.
Yep.
But you know, I've enjoyed my career. It's stupid stuff like that you see. You're like, "Oh, geez," you know, that you
Yeah.
remember, you know, you remember the relationships that you make, you know, and as stressful as it is and as it was and it always will be, man, the experiences that and the leadership and the growth that you experience as a human being serving in the military is, you know, second to none. You know, we make fun of Marines. We
Oh,
make fun
yeah.
of Army. We serve together, but if a civilian tries to make fun of us, like all of our branches are like, "No, those is fighting words," you know, and we stick up for
Yeah,
each other,
yep.
you know. So, yeah, man, I wouldn't trade it for the world. I got a ride in the back of my F-15, the one that I crewed. 91604 was my aircraft tail number. 91604. I was stationed at Lakenheath,
Nice.
England, and got a ride in the
Nice.
back of my F-15 in Zaragoza, Spain. And there wasn't much to look at because it's pretty flat there. But it was still a really, really cool experience, man. They tried to make me throw up, but
Yeah,
I came
dude.
pretty close. But yeah,
Dude,
what a
I
great
remember
experience
mine.
that
It
was.
was tail number 85-15-11. You know, 85-15-11. And you know, so
Yeah.
it's you'll never forget that, man. You'll those are things that, and
Never
you're right,
forget
man.
your
It's
jet.
the experiences that you have. What's that?
I said, you never forget your jet. I crewed that jet back in like 2002 to 2004, my first aircraft that I ever crewed. You know, you never
Oh yeah.
forget that your aircraft tail number.
Nope, you never. Like my very first aircraft I ever was a DCC on is 84-1295, and it breaks my heart because it's in the drone program right now. So I know eventually it'll be yeah. I know eventually
Shotgun.
it's gonna bite the dust. But the very first airplane that ever hit
Yep.
my head on that I got a Falcon bite on was aircraft 84-1260, and that's already in the drink because that was the first 16 that got shot down from the drone program. So it's in the Gulf of Mexico somewhere. So.
Jesus. You heard about that F-16 from March Reserve Base, yeah?
Yeah, I heard. You know, it's funny because I actually deployed with that unit, the Lobos, out of South Dakota,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
so
That was
they're
nuts.
a really good unit there. But you know, and they got really good Vipers, man. I don't know what happened, and you know, it's all speculation, but
Sure.
it was pretty cool. Made a nice little
Yeah,
hole.
right.
You know,
Oh, yeah.
what are
Oh,
you gonna
it definitely made an impact for sure.
do?
You know, they quoted a hydraulic failure, you know, and so I don't know, man. It'll be
Yeah, you know
investigated.
what's
It's
funny?
probably.
I love listening to all the pundits that have no idea about airplanes or especially
Oh,
fighter jets or anything like
I
that in general. You know, and it's like they're all like, oh my gosh, you know, they come out with the most outlandish theories, and they go, oh, there was hydrazine on board, and that was like rocket fuel and all this. I'm like, yeah, you know, you have no idea what hydrazine is. You know what I mean? You have right. no idea what hydrazine is. It's just
or they said
you're,
that.
You're good.
Well, the funniest part about everything was when it first happened, they said a hydraulic failure. And I was like, I can kind of see that, right? Like, I mean, I can kind of see that. Yeah. They're like, yeah, then they had flight control issues because of hydraulics. And I was like, wrong. Hydraulics yeah. are not part of the flight control system. Like in our head, we're going through, like, our CDCs, and we're, like, going through, like, what we know. We're like, nope, hydraulics yeah. is not actually routed that way. It's actually routed this way. And it's like, we're doing our own, you know, analysis of the crash. Like, well, actually, it probably could be pilot
yeah,
error
yeah.
if you fly.
Yeah.
Excuse me. You know, but now if it was an F-15 crash and they said, you know, hydraulic failure, I'm like, well, shit, that could be anything. That could be flight controls. It could be landing gear. It could be because our whole aircraft is operated by flight, by hydraulic fluid. You guys have hydraulic fluid as a backup, you know. So they'll figure it out. It'll probably be something stupid like because the pilot punched out. You know, he called in a failure for something like that and then punched out, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that.
So I mean,
have had some issues. Some of the GEs have
yep.
had, like, you know, engine mech issues and stuff. So it
yep.
could be that. I mean, there wasn't like a big explosion or anything like that. So
no.
I mean, he was still flying. So I think it could have been a motor issue. I honestly think most of the time when those things go down, it's usually just a motor issue. So
yeah. which is
you know,
which
so,
you
so
bring
we'll,
up a good point,
find
man, because there wasn't an explosion at all. It just kind of fell through and. You know what
yeah.
I mean? So, and was it like it was going really slow? You know, like I'm surprised that it didn't like explode, you know, but it doesn't
yeah,
look like it
yeah.
did. It just looks like it came apart and, you know, just looked
yeah,
like an aircraft
people,
crash.
People were all
you know
worried
I mean?
Because it was carrying live weapons. It did have live weapons on it because it was one of their
yes,
alert birds because they stood alert out
yes,
there.
Yes, it did.
So,
yep.
Yeah, so they had a couple 120s, a couple A9s, you know, and a hot gun. So people were all
oh,
like,
yeah.
"Oh my gosh, it's gonna blow up!" And you know, they went out
yeah.
to the safe distance, 4,000 feet, get out of there, you know, which is
yep.
what you're supposed to do. But you know, and but people
sure.
aren't understanding. Like, oh my gosh, they're thinking like to like a nuke. You know, what I mean, all of a sudden, you know, they're gonna somebody's gonna go in there, and then you're just gonna see this big cloud, this big mushroom cloud over Southern California or somewhere. You know, it's like,
right.
no, it doesn't work
Absolutely.
That way, people. It does not work that way.
Yeah.
So.
All right, so let's as we start to close the show, let's talk about this. Talk about your 5 steps to help navigate yourself after divorce, that resource that you have. Quickly talk about that, and then we'll start to close the show.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I appreciate it. So, you know, we all go through our critical times, you know, it's our in our aftermath. And so these are the five most critical steps that you need to really get out of the funk and really get you moving. Okay. You know, so like the first one, honestly, the first one is, you know, your faith. Okay. You can first actually get help. You have to seek help, you know, and like I said, you have to have that group around you. You know, you have to, whether it's your family, your friends, whatever, if it's, you know, especially for us veterans, if you go to the VA, you get free help there, you know, where you can speak to somebody and get that help. You have to seek that help. You know, you have to bite the bullet, you know, swallow that pride, get out there, because guess what? You always need help. When we're in the military, we don't go out by ourselves. Our fighter jets never go out by themselves. They always go out in pairs. Why? Because they need a wingman. So this is where you need a wingman. So you go out there, seek that help, find out who can help you the most, but who's going to be unbiased. You don't want somebody who's going to be, you know, who's going to just blow smoke up your ass or anything like that just to make you feel better. You want someone who's going to help you divulge and get right down into the abyss to help break down what it is, what's happening, so that way you can really embrace what's going on, because that's the key. You have to embrace that. Okay, the second step is to build your faith, whether it's faith in God or it's faith in yourself. You have to build that. And the way you do that, the way you build your faith, is to create little victories. So what I suggest is you write down your goals, what you want to do, what you want to get. Because once you've established and you got that help and you kind of have that clear program, you know, and this is where we're going to OODA loop it, observe, orient, decide, and act. So, you know, once you get that help, you're observing everything what's going on. So now you're going to orient yourself in that best possible way. So the way you do that, you write down your goals, whether it's a 7-day, a weekly goal, 30-day goals, 90-day goals, 6 months, 1 year. You write down these goals, and every single day when you accomplish it, boom, you do it. you do it. You know, when you look at some of these veterans that come back, that they have your triple amputees, you know, quadruple amputees, and they're just full of life. Why? Because every single day they're experiencing another victory. They're doing another goal, and they're creating that another goal. Hey, I'm going to grab this with my, you know, with my prosthetic. I'm going to be able to take another step tomorrow. You know, those little steps are going to help you out. So that's step number two. Step three, which is a huge, huge part, is forgiveness. Number one, if you're not forgiving yourself, most importantly, forgiving yourself for upsetting, for just basically screwing up, whatever it is, even if it was your fault or even if it wasn't your fault, you have to forgive yourself and understand that you're not only human. You're going to make mistakes. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. It's just the way it is. And then number two, you have to forgive if it's something else that happened on the outside that had nothing controlling over you. You have to forgive that other person. Like for me, I had to forgive my wife. You know, I you know, with all the infidelity and stuff, I had to forgive her, because it's like you got this rucksack on you and you got all these rocks or whatever, or you got this big trash bag or whatever, and you're trying to climb this mountain, but it's all unnecessary stuff. It's not gear that you need. So what do? You just let it go. You drop it. You forgive them and you move on. That's really how do you do. And then how do you do that? Easy. You go to the person, or you know, through your daily goals, find a way to build up to get to that person. Or if it's for you, when you're building those goals and you're starting to see that progress, you start to say, hey, it's okay. I'm okay to make these mistakes. I'm okay to mess up every now and again. Step four, you have to live for you. Listen, no matter what you do, somebody's always going to be critical of you. Doesn't matter. Who cares? There's always going to be someone who's going to be critical of you. There's always going to be someone who's going to criticize you. They're always going to tell you that you're doing it wrong, that they got a better way of doing it, you know. But that's not for you. Not everybody wants to drive a Lamborghini. Not everybody wants to drive a Hellcat. Some people will like to drive a beat-up 99 Honda Accord. You know, who cares? But it doesn't matter. That's for you. You have to start living for you. And if that's you, that's who you are, that's you, you have to live for you. You cannot look for acceptance outside of other people, because society's acceptance, then you're always going to be constantly striving for that acceptance, and you're never going to achieve it, because their acceptance is one thing today and then send something else to the next day. And it's a constant roller coaster. You cannot do that. So you have to live for you, because whatever you live for you is what you're giving to, because you are your own self. You are your own blessing. You are your own – this is what you do for you is what your gift to the world, because God has given you unique gifts and he's given you unique blessings. And if you are holding that back and you're not allowing that to be blessed and bless the rest of the world for you, then guess what? You're being a selfish person, because you're not blessing the world the way God intended you to do. So you have to live for you. And then step five,
I love it.
Stay the course. Just stay the course, and it's going to be happening.
Awesome, man, dude. Amazing content. Amazing, everything that you have going on. And I want to thank you so much for your time, man, and being a guest on my show, Life Transformation Radio.
Dude, thank you so much. I really appreciate you, man. It was a lot of fun, brother. Appreciate you.
Yeah, man. So for those who want to connect with Sean Romero and his faithfully led mission, he is on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. In the show notes is his Calendly link for a 1-hour call with him. Connect with him, and I'm telling you, the guy is absolute fire. He will revolutionize your life and change whatever it is that needs to be changed. He's got you. So with that, we close the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for listening. If anything resonated with you, please connect with Sean Romero, connect with him in his links, and let him know that you heard him on Life Transformation Radio. If anything resonated with you, subscribe to Life Transformation Radio wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts. And don't forget to leave us a rating and review. As we close, I always say, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the core values that you hold in your heart. And I call that living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.